All right, welcome back, everybody. I know it's been actually a couple weeks, which is I think the longest we've ever gone without doing a show. Just a lot of crazy things happening, just between kind of all the hosts that we weren't able to get a show going. But as far as I can tell, we're going to be right back on our schedule, and to make up for the last couple weeks, we're going to try to squeak in a couple more episodes in there to kind of make up for that, because kind of falling behind on our long list of topics to talk about. And I can only assume that there's going to be a ton of stuff coming out with CMON between the patch and just all the other stuff that they have in store for 2022. So definitely want to get some of the other topics covered, so that it's not just, episode after episode covering, new reveals and whatnot. We want to kind of get back to also discussing tactics and just, stuff of that sort. But if you have not already seen the title, we are going to be discussing the CMON Song Chat. It's kind of like their podcast that they do every once in a while to kind of, give us updates, and, they take on some questions from the chat and then they answer them. This one in particular was kind of like their holiday special. And, we listened to the song chat and kind of, took everything in that they talked about. And on this episode, we're going to kind of just be going over everything that they talked about and then kind of giving our thoughts on it. Today I have with me Brett. Thank you so much for being on.
Sure. It's a pleasure. we're going to try to cram everything in an hour here, but yeah, I wouldn't call it a bombshell per se, but there was definitely some pretty relevant stuff that they discussed. And I think that, I'm of the opinion that ultimately it's going to – I think the ripple effects from this change are a little bit bigger than some people might think. But that's my theory, and I could be wrong, so I'm happy kind of to – have a little healthy debate with you, because I'm not entirely sure that we see eye to eye on it. So I'm going to do my best to, throw my suit on and see if I can be an attorney and persuade you. So the jury's out on it. So we'll kind of treat it that way. And even for a little bit of fun, we can ask our viewers, whose take they think is more likely to come to fruition. It could be interesting, but I'm definitely eager to discuss it.
So anyone that's on our Discord, I kind of threw it out there that, me and Brett, there's probably only one of the things that they discussed that we probably don't see eye to eye, but I could be totally wrong, because me and Brett have not actually discussed what our thoughts on each of the topics. So it'll be interesting to kind of see where we agree and whatnot. But this show definitely is probably going to be a quicker one, because they're actually, in a nutshell, there wasn't a whole lot that they revealed. I believe there's only, three major topics, and then they discussed the new Lannister and Stark starter boxes that are going to have all resculpts. And so to kind of just get that one out of the way, if you have not already heard, the Stark and Lannister starter halves, they're getting their own starter boxes, and it's going to be identical in every way with one exception. The Starks, instead of Outriders, are going to get the Karstark Spearmen, and the Lannisters, instead of the Mountainsmen, they're going to get the Clegane Brigands. So the resculpts all look amazing. All of them are awesome. I only have one small gripe, and it's as far as I can tell, it's just me. I haven't had anyone else say this. The Mountain, his pose looks awesome. but for me personally, it just seems out of character. Like that pose, it just doesn't seem like a pose that the Mountain would do with the shield and everything. It seems too, I don't know. Again, that's probably just me and it's probably just my little nitpick, but otherwise, seeming out of character for the Mountain, at least in my opinion, the pose still looks amazing. Awesome. Just before we move on to the, you know, the meat and potatoes of what they discussed, I'm going to give my favorite unit and my favorite model that they resculpted. And I want to say, even though I'm a huge Stark player, you know, and I love my Berserkers and I love how they've made them dynamic and everything, I'm going to have to go with the Lannister Guardsmen. Personally, out of the Stark versus Lannister starter box, those were the sculpts I hated the most because of their pose, not necessarily because of the detail of them. Just their pose just seemed so weird, and it was awkward trying to get the models into the trays and out of the trays because of their swords always poking into the next guy. These sculpts look absolutely amazing, and I might actually buy two, you know, I only plan to buy one of each, but because of them, I might actually buy two of the Lannister starter half just so I can have four units of them and not have to use any of the original sculpts. But and then I would say it was really close for like single model. It was a tie between Jaime Lannister and Robb Stark, personally for me. And I'm going to barely have to give it to Robb Stark, mostly because Jaime's other models look cool. I like them. Robb's two models, they look fine. Like, you know, the more the one that comes in the starter box, you know, is nice and kind of fits like kind of how he is overseeing the battle. The other one I like a lot too, but it always reminded me of Aragorn running into battle in the last movie in Return of the King. So that one always kind of made me laugh a little bit because it always reminded me of that. So I would have to give the best model to Robb Stark. And before we move on, Brett, what would you say is your number one unit resculpt and model resculpt?
Well, the Guardsmen, they look really good. It's got me a little bit depressed because obviously, I know you know, but I sold those Lannisters that I had painted purple with all of the conversions and everything because I wanted to do a really vibrant blue and gold color scheme. So I had started over on my Lannisters, and I started with the Guards. So if I'm going to put the time and effort into painting them, it's going to be a little bit depressing because I'm going to be really tempted to do those new sculpts. But they look phenomenal. As far as the sculpts go, though, I do go ahead and give it to the Berserkers. I really, really like them. Their original Berserker sculpts I like. They were a pleasure to paint. These new ones look even better. The faces are really, really nice. There's a lot of character in them. So I'm going to give it to the Berserkers. And then as far as the single models go, I've always been, ever since I started playing Wargame, I've always been a fan of female sculpts, but I like female sculpts that are kind of like a little bit more classy and have like an attractive face, you know, and it can be difficult with that. But I'm looking at the new Catelyn and the new Cersei, and they are definitely very nice sculpts. They're classy. They're not over the top. They're not ridiculous. And they're not over-sexualized, but based on the renders that we've seen, they both are really attractive. So I am definitely interested in painting both of them to, you know, try to use some painting techniques to make them visually appealing. I think so far my favorite song model that I painted was it's an attractive model, and I spent a very long time doing, you know, eyeliner and blush on her face, and I've spent a lot of time on the lips and stuff, so I'm looking forward to doing Cersei and Catelyn. So they get Between the two, I guess I'll give it to Cersei because I'm a Lannister at heart, and then the Berserkers.
Nice. Yeah, and that's not to, you know, those are just our favorites. All of them look amazing. In my opinion, an honorable mention is Sansa. I think they did an awesome job turning back the clock on Sansa. You know, Sansa's resculpt makes her look so much younger in what I would picture her age, you know, at least at the start of the books, whereas the Sansa we kind of got with the initial launch, it seems a bit older, kind of a little bit further into the progression of the story. So it was really nice to kind of see the way they came out with this sculpt. All right, with that said, one more thing I wanted to mention, which they mentioned at the very end of the song chat, someone asked the question about Greyjoys, if they'll ever get like cavalry and war machines and whatnot, and the short answer of that pretty much is that it doesn't make a lot of sense, but it is possible. But they did spoil, Michael did spoil a little bit in there that Greyjoys will be getting a solo of some kind. They did not mention anything past that, but it's still, you know, one of those little things I want to throw out there that they did say, just so I don't forget to mention it once we get into the big issues, the big topics. So, again, with that said, we will jump right into the big stuff. First one I wanted to discuss was NCUs. So they're going back to, if I'm not mistaken, it's identical to what it was, or it might be slightly different, but essentially the same. And that's if there's no room on the tactics board, your NCU cannot activate. So meaning if both players take 3 NCUs, and assuming no one took Priet Prix to open up the 6th spot with House of the Undying, that 6th NCU, if the other 5 spots on the board have been taken, cannot activate. Personally, I don't think it will. I think it's a good change. I think, all it really stops is just getting a free pass with an NCU, and I think that's fine. Really, I don't think it changes the meta of 3 NCU at all. People are just going to make sure that one of their 3 NCUs has a effect that does not need the tactics board. For example, Tycho, just at the start of any turn. So, and then even though you'll have every other round, you'll potentially have your NCU not be able to activate on the offhand or on the all those other rounds, your opponent will then not have an NCU that they can activate. So it will even out in the end anyways. So really, in short, all it is stopping is for you having like a free, you know, I'm just going to lay down my NCU so that now you have to make a decision. And I think that's a good thing. What do you think, Brett?
Okay, so with this one, just want to kind of add a little bit to what you said. It's similar to when the game came out in its original release, but there is a subtle difference. When the game originally came out, when you activated an NCU, the only thing you were allowed to do was move to the tactics board. You didn't have a choice. So in this instance, for example, we'll pick on Wildling Diplomacy because it's been kind of a powerful card since it came out. And in the case of Wildling Diplomacy, all your opponent as a free folk player had to do was wait until there were 2 zones left and you would activate your NCU. They could mark those 2 zones. You didn't have a choice but to claim one of them. And in the case of Starks, who were super popular and the Mountain That Rides and things like that, it was pretty much an insta-kill. And there wasn't anything you could do to prevent it. Then when they did an update, they changed it to where that rule was basically omitted. You could activate an NCU and do nothing. You could activate an NCU and claim the board if you wanted. It gave a little bit of counterplay for some of these more punishing effects when you would claim a zone. Now what you're seeing is it's kind of somewhere in between. So you can still activate an NCU, and if there's spots open on the board, you can choose to do nothing with that NCU. Gives you a little bit of counterplay for some of those punishing effects. You've got things like Wildling Diplomacy still. You've got Whispered Threats. And there's a few other ones. I think Euron has one, Mind Games, where both players get to resolve the effect of the zone. So there can be cases where you still have the option. Now, what it does change for the meta, and I think I agree with you, I think people are still going to run three NCUs. And it's not because three NCUs is just clearly better. I think a lot of it will have to do with the fear of running against three NCUs when you only have two, and some of the zone replacement effects still being very, 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 very game-changing. You've got free charges off the board still. You've got effects like Illyrio Mopatis, who's a big, big heal and a weakened token. You don't want to run the two NCUs and offer your opponent the opportunity to, at their leisure, trigger their Illyrio heal. By, you know, they can take an NCU and pass, ensuring that they'll have that zone open. But that gives you a little bit of counterplay, and that's basically what happens. So in a lot of rounds, you know, the swords go first, then maybe it's the bag or the letters. And, you know, once those two zones are left open, one opponent is likely to activate an NCU and pass to ensure that later in the round they can get an effect. What it does do is, for example, let's say that standard round begins, players move to the tactics board to get the best benefits out of them, and the maneuver zone's open. Traditionally, as the game is played now, you could just activate your NCU, claim the maneuver zone, perform a retreat, or do a maneuver, and then you know that later in the round you can just flip and pass that NCU. Now, there's going to be some corner cases where you need a retreat or you need a maneuver, but you need it like now. And doing that now is going to block your third NCU off of the board, and there's going to be an opportunity cost that's lost if you flip that NCU and wait to do that, because then you're giving your opponent a couple more turns. So it's not a huge, massive, massive, like, game-breaking change, but there's going to be some corner cases where the 3 NCU versus 3 NCU is going to put a little bit of pressure and strain on the player who didn't go first, because they're going to want to get all of their activations out, but they're not going to be able to. But oftentimes, it just doesn't matter, because everything's happening so fast. The engagements are there, and the game's starting to close out. You're not really just idly passing your NCU. That's more or less around 1-2, sometimes around 3 thing, where, you know, I'm going to pass my NCU, you move a board piece first, you know. So it's not huge, but I don't think it's enough to break a 3 NCU meta, but there's, like I said, there's going to be some corner cases where the opponent's a little bit annoyed, and they've got to do some things that they don't necessarily want to do in an order that they don't want to do them.
Agreed. I think overall, I think this is a good change for the game. And as I mentioned before, you know, there's only a handful of things that they had talked about that they were changing, and it's not like this huge change. It's not like it's going to drastically change your games. You know, it's just a little bit here and there to kind of help the, you know, the health of the game, in my opinion. And leading into the next one is they are removing the extra point granted by commanders when controlling objectives. In particular, this only applies for the missions where there are objectives and that, you know, they grant extra points, such as Game of Thrones, Dance with Dragons, Honed and Ready, and there might be Clash of Kings and whatnot. It does not take away the extra abilities that Fire and Blood give to commanders, or Here We Stand. Those are still active. It's simply only for the ones where the objectives give points every round. So not like Winds of Winter, because that one didn't give you points for your commander. But so no longer will your commander give you +1. And again, I think this is a great change. I can't tell you how many times that one simple thing is the deciding factor of the game, because your opponent lost the dice roll and they have to deploy first, and it gives you a huge idea of where their commander is going, And then if you know your commander is better in a unit better than theirs, especially in a mission where the objectives are in the middle, such as Dance of Dragons, you can deploy your commander across from their commander, get to it first, and now not only are you getting two around from that one, but you've also stopped them from getting two. It was too big of a swing, in my opinion, that, you know, it kind of changed the game quite a bit. And I can't tell you how many times I'd play, like, newer players. I wouldn't say newer, but, you know, like, more casual players. And I'd play a casual list, but, you know, there's still certain tactics that you kind of do, you know, just as a normal thing. You know, you deploy your commander across from an objective, and then you notice that your opponent didn't. And now it's like an uphill battle for your opponent because they're not in that mindset of, I have to get my commander on an objective. I think this is a really great thing. I think, you know, incentivizing you to be a little more offensive with your commander. You know, in a miniature war game, it's a little different than in, like, real life. You want your commander to kind of be out there, you know, hacking away at the enemy. You don't want them, you know, because we play a game where, you know, you might play a campaign, but that's, you know, that's kind of a different story. But if you're talking like pickup games or tournaments or whatnot, the game is the game. So you're not worried about making sure that your commander survived to, you know, lead your army into other battles. You know, you're worried about your commander, you know, getting out there and doing some damage. And taking away this extra point means that your commander is, it's not as big of a deal if you send your commander, because now that your commander unit won't give you any more victory points than, let's say, you know, your base 5-point unit with no attachment that's just is kind of meant to sit on an objective. And, you know, they kind of mention in the chat that in their song chat that, you know, too many players were, you know, taking, you know, these commanders and just kind of sitting, you know, building them in such a way that you just sit on objectives. And I, you know, I'm not going to lie, I've done it plenty of times myself. You know, we've talked about on the show even that, you know, optimally you either wanted your commander to be like super offensive and able to wreck through things, or in a very cheap unit that just sits on an objective while you throw other things in front of it to protect it. For example, one of my lists, you know, Tywin and Poorfellows, a 4-point investment that has, for 4 points, a really good survivability. You know, with Lannister Supremacy, anything getting close, I can weaken it. It's healing ability, high morale, and I'm getting 2 points, especially if it's a mission where it's like Game of Thrones and I have an objective really close to me. Now, knowing that I'm kind of wasting Tywin by sitting him in that unit incentivizes me to actually build him in a list where he will be more useful and even, you know, more thematic in a different unit. And there's some more other stuff there, but I don't want to, like, take all the, you know, all the talking points, but I'll turn it over to you, Brett. What's your thoughts on this change?
Oh, well, for me personally, and maybe this is where the debate kind of starts, I guess. For me, maybe it's pie in the sky. But for me, I feel like this change is more meta shifting than what people are giving it credit for, right? Because currently, and basically since, I don't know, for a while, the scale of favor where, you know, more activations versus less activations has been tipped pretty heavily in favor of more activations. In the previous iterations of the game, like 1.6, it was tipped more for higher activations because the units did so much damage and you had the opportunity to set up last turn, first turn, and you could, it was very easy to wipe out a unit. You know, if we'll just pick on Starks, for example. Starks running 10 activations against a 7 activation Lannister list. The Lannister player has moved all of his pieces, and he's done responding to anything that the Stark player does. Now the Stark player can play Swift Advance, Devastating Impact, controlling the horse. They do a big bomb, 10-inch charge, and they smack your unit. They do a ton of damage. They're going first next round. They take the swords, and they pop a unit. And now it's a 10-6 instead of a 10-7, and it just kind of steamrolled from there. It was very difficult to recover. In this version of the game, they've addressed some of the one-shot potential. They've addressed some of the, I'll dare say, screw-you type of combos, like the aforementioned Swift Advance into Devastating Impact. You know, they've addressed some of that. So it's not as easy to one-shot units. Even when you've got the last turn, first turn advantage, it doesn't necessarily guarantee that you're going to kill that unit. So now what you've seen become favorable as a meta choice is basically body blocking. So you'll see 8-9 activation lists, like a horde-style army. And almost everybody can do it. You know, Night's Watch can run conscripts just as a healing battery. Greyjoys do it really, really well. 4-point bowmen, 4-point trappers. Free folk do it well. 4-point raiders. And then, you know, the potential to get free units from Endless Horde. And Lannisters can kind of just spam poor fellows. But the name of that game has become, how much can I body block? How long can I tie up my opponent's best unit? Unfortunately, picking on flayed men a little bit, they're kind of the hero unit for basically everybody that's not free folk. I've got a unit of flayed men. Can my flayed men break through? Can my flayed men get through some of these units and then start devastating the back line? And in a lot of cases, that answer was no, because you're swimming through a sea of bodies, a sea of wounds, and you're trying to get through them to get to the backfield where the commander's just sitting and scoring 2 points. So you have the option to either put your commander on an objective in the backfield to try to match their 2-point scoring and kind of just battle for the center, or you bring your commander into the fight to try to add some leverage to win the middle. But unfortunately, a lot of times the game's ending in round 4. So with -1 victory point for scoring, it's a little bit more difficult in that race to 10. So you're assuming 2 victory points every round for the commander that's sitting in the backfield. They're scoring between rounds 2 and 4, they're getting 6 victory points. If they've got another unit that's sitting on a back objective as well, they're getting 9 just on the objectives alone in the backfield. That causes the game to end quickly. So even if you do break through the center, you've got to divide your forces to deal with those other 2 units that are just sitting there scoring, because if you kill the commander, sure, you stop the 2 points, but the unit sitting on the other back objective is going to get them to 10, and the game's going to end. So scoring, I believe that the game is going to last to round 5, and in a lot of cases, it's going to last till round 6. The game ending in round 4 is probably going to be very, very unlikely. You'd have to do a lot. And what that does is it takes some of the wind out of the sails of these horde armies, because I think nearly everybody who's listening can attest to, you know, I've played a game and I just clubbed my opponent nearly to death. I destroyed 20 points, but I couldn't break through and get to the commander, so I lost 10-5. You know, I killed so many units, and, you know, his commander unit was alive and he had another unit with 2 wounds or something like that. I just needed one more round and I could have tabled it. And I think that those horde armies, like in particular Greyjoys, in particular Free Folk, the poor fellow type of Lannister armies, a lot of times from what I've seen of watching tournament games, they're just barely hanging on by a thread. Especially in a mission like Honed and Ready, the poor fellows with the Lannister commander has been battered by arrows. It's got 3 or 4 wounds left. It's not surviving another round, but they close the game. So commander scoring change, those horde armies might not be able to hold up. They might not be able to last till round 5 or 6. But additionally, you're getting a lot more mileage out of units like Stag Knights, who need the game to go to round 5 or 6 for them to really get their value. Stag Knights are good. They become very, very good starting round 5. If they make it to round 6, they're nuts. But unfortunately, the game's normally over by then. So you can kind of just ignore that unit and let it do what it's doing. In particular, a unit like Eldon with Stagnite, if it's become an objective babysitter, that's 8 points that's not in the fight. You're probably getting outmanned and outmatched because their commander is likely in a four-point unit. So it could be a meta shift. Maybe it won't. At the very least, it can't hurt for some things to shake up and change even a little bit. But I'm thinking that it's possible that hyper aggressive Targaryen armies, for example, can win even in these objective based missions, because they can just go full throttle, balls to the walls, and just destroy your army. If your army is designed to last four or five rounds, maybe it won't anymore because you're having to deal with a constant barrage and a constant assault from something like Targaryens, or, you know, like a mountain led list that's just hyper aggressive and is really able to get the most out of overrun and assault orders and things like this. And they're being rewarded for being aggressive. But again, could be pie in the sky. We'll have to see.
Yeah, I definitely agree with all that. That was actually, you know, that was one of the reasons why my least favorite mission out of all of them is Dark Wings, Dark Words, simply because you score by killing things, you score by objectives, you score by extra point with commander, and you score by the objective cards. You scored so many ways that no matter pretty much what you played, it was almost always over by turn four or round four. And personally, I don't know if this change for that mission will change that much, but with that mission aside, you know, I think you're right that, you know, games are definitely going to be lasting. I would say competitive games are going to start lasting till round five a lot more consistently, and casual games are definitely going to be lasting till round six, which is, I think, a really good thing because, you know, the game is designed with six rounds in it. You know, obviously games can end before that, but I would say it's rare that I ever make it to round six, even in casual games. And I think when the game is designed around a six-round, you know, cycle, that certain balances tend to not show through the way they should if you can't get to that round six. For, like you were saying, Stagnites, do they have an ability on round six, or they stop on round five? I think they get an ability on round six.
Yeah, round six, they get plus two attack dice, which is nine for them, and they would have critical blow, thundering, and vicious.
I think it's auto hits. I think it's auto hits for every rank they have or something like that.
Let me have a look. I'll pull it up. I could be wrong. Maybe it's battle endurance that adds attack dice. Yeah, you're right. Stag Knights get critical blow in round two, vicious round three, thundering round four. Deals plus one hit for each of this unit's remaining ranks starting in round five, which is pretty substantial. Plus, potentially plus three hits is definitely better than plus two attack dice.
Yeah, and exactly. And there's plenty of other things that are based on the game round. And I think this change will definitely help with that. Also, with that said, you know, there's something that they mentioned, you know, this rule only really truly existed because of NCU commanders. It was a way to counterbalance how strong they were. And, you know, even then, they were still so strong that a lot of people still ran one list of each, you know, a field commander and an NCU commander. And then when they got rid of the NCU commanders, as in their words, this rule kind of just got grandfathered in, you know, it just kind of, you know, went into the new, you know, 2021 missions. And really, I agree that it doesn't make any sense anymore now that there's no MCU commanders. I think, completely taking it out is a good thing because, now you don't feel obligated to sit your commander on an objective. And I think that's really important for not only the health of the game competitively, but just even thematically. I say no one, I'm sure there's probably someone out there, but most people, I would assume, they want to see their commander go out there and just start, cleaving through, the enemy and actually making a difference, or even a support commander who wants to get up into the fight to help support, let's say, like Asha, commander giving out that morale bubble. If you're forced to kind of sit her back on an objective, that bubble is a lot less effective. But if you're not really obligated to sit back anymore and you can kind of get up there, you can start making that bubble morale start to be more effective. And, this is true for any of the other support commanders with the bubble effects or even like long range. Let's say like anyone with like Mark Target or any token effects. Overall, I think a great change. And I think, as you were saying, it's definitely, I think, going to shift the meta, quite a bit. People are going to have to start, not everyone, some people, this might not really affect you, but others, they're going to have to kind of change up their game plan. All right. So there is only one more topic to talk about, and this is the one that I think that me and Brett will disagree on. Now, I will put it this way. My thoughts on the matter are not completely one-sided, so I'll jump right into it. And so they changed it to where, while in combat, only options will be to attack or retreat. You no longer can activate and choose to do nothing if engaged. Brett, correct me if I'm wrong. That's only if you're engaged, right? You can still activate and do nothing if you're not engaged. So let's say I'm just on an objective and I wish to just activate and do nothing. Okay.
Yeah, my understanding from the developer's chat is that this is for when units are engaged. So far as I can tell, it seems to be kind of a fluff choice. I'm not 100% sure. I didn't get to watch the whole thing because I was working, but my understanding from the conversations that are being had is this is when you are engaged, you must select attack or retreat. And if you select retreat, you must actually complete a retreat. So it seems that they've closed the loophole of saying, I'm going to declare a retreat as my action, but I'm actually just going to sit here.
Correct. Yep. That's what I got to. And don't worry if you didn't listen to the whole thing. I was lame and listened to it four times. it's interesting. So let's put it this way. I like the idea. I like the direction they're going. I just don't like leaving it at where it's at. And I would say my only big concern, which actually ends up being their example, is Lannister Supremacy. I think Lannister Supremacy is ridiculously good. It's way too good. And the only counter to it was to not attack. Now that you're forced to attack or retreat off an objective, it's way too good. You're going to be able to see armies of nothing but Lannister Guardsmen with maybe some poor fellows with Warcry to get those panic token and vulnerables out there to make sure you fail those Lannister Supremacies, or you're forced to just leave objectives and then you just lose because your opponent's on an objective. Now, that isn't to say that that's going to happen all the time, every time, but I'm going to say on an average, you're going to have this huge negative play experience with this Lannister Supremacy that up until now, or at least up until the change, it's not been a huge issue because people's answer is just not attack it. And they made the point that Lannister Guardsmen were balanced with the ability in mind, but in my opinion, as they're working right now, Lannister Guards are awesome at 5 points. You put in a vet, make them a 6-point attachment, as I've mentioned plenty of times when we talk about Lannisters, that gives them just enough bite to give them some offense to where they're not completely, like, you know, you're not completely relying on your opponent attacking you, and now your Lannister supremacy is that much more dangerous. You know, I just tested out a list the other day. It's Roose and Guardsmen, Guardsmen and Guardsmen, both with vets, another Guardsman with nothing, poor fellows with Champion of the Faith, and another poor fellow with Champion of the Faith, and then Joffrey and Sparrow. It's 8 activations, 6 combat units, and, you know, you just have the Lannister Guardsmen screen the poor fellows as they throw out a bajillion tokens, and you can't attack anything without fear of possibly taking 7, 8, 9, or 10 wounds from a Lannister supremacy between Hear Me Roar, Joffrey, the vet, and then all the minuses, especially depending on how you play with terrain with Corpse Pile. You could be having an impossible morale test, or if you're a conscript or a poor fellow, or sorry, a conscript or a raider unit, and you have +1 to that damage as well, you literally cannot attack that unit for fear of exploding off of one ability. It is way too good. Way, way too good. And I would say I am open to the argument of this being a very healthy change for the game if you change Lannister Supremacy or if there's a cap on the damage that you can take from a panic test. All right, rant over. What's your opinion, Brett?
Okay, I just want to start by prefacing one thing, and I can understand where you're coming from, and I think a lot of people will likely have the same reservations, in particular with and it's not just Lannister Supremacy. I think people are going to be quite afraid of Roose and Blackguard. That unit is super, super, super scary. I've messed with it before. I was playing a casual-ish competitive game. It was a ranked game on a Song of Ice and Fire stat. I was winning the game like 6-2 or something like that. I was playing Targaryens. I destroyed everything in the center, and he had Roose and Blackguard left and Solo Jorah maybe. And meanwhile, I had my entire army. My veterans controlled the center. It was Dance for Dragons. And I could have very easily just taken Khal Drogo, went and picked up the other objective token, and won the game. Because Roose was holding a token, he was never getting to me. And Little Jorah wasn't going to do anything. I chose to play the game. much to my a very bad decision. I chose to play the game. I chose to go ahead and challenge Roose, as opposed to just saying, well, you know, it's round 3. Here's what I can do. There's not anything you can do about it. I out-activate you. Even if you crown zap me and I drop the token, I can activate and go pick it back up. I went and played the game. And Roose Blackguard, from me trying to attack them, destroyed me. He didn't kill the Blood Riders, killed them. They were unable to hurt him. And between Spread Fear and the Horrific Visage, I lost my Screamers when I charged him. And then the Spread Fear killed my Little Jorah. So it was like, oh, my God, I had the game won. And then all of a sudden I'm looking around. My army's devastated by this one idle unit that's movement 2 and really can't even hurt me. But in the end, when I went into him, he hurt me because Vicious plus Intimidating Presence is nasty. And he just messed me up, and I lost like 11-10 because I couldn't kill Roose, and not just that I couldn't kill him, I couldn't get him to drop the objective. I think at one point I had to charge Jorah into his rear to get him to drop the token, and it didn't work. And then I got spread fear and it killed Jorah. But nonetheless, I can see some people's reservations. But the thing to keep in mind is there's another layer to this whole story that none of us know, right? There's also a balance patch. They're working on it. They're doing a balance patch. And it's just one of those things. If you have no faith in the developers, why are you even playing the game? So you have to have faith that they've looked at this change and they said, okay, let's take this, let's play it, let's see what needs tweaked from here. Is this too powerful? But I think overall, some of these fears stem from a mentality where you're still playing the same game that you were playing this month, last month, the previous month, starting with the 2021 update. But that's the whole point of a balance patch. That's the whole point of these things that they do. And what, for me, makes me love this game so much is that this game is constantly evolving. And what was good before may not be good now. What was bad before, maybe it's good now. And it's constantly shifting the way that you think and the way that you play this game. And I think every army has some type of counter, some type of thing that they can do to get around these units. Lannister Guard have terrible morale. So you can play a panic game, and you can bring that double-edged sword against the Lannisters as well. You can bring units like Followers of Bone or your own Blackguard. And in a game where you can retreat your Blackguard and force the Guard to charge you if they want to kill anything, and then the Guardsmen have to take a morale test at -3, maybe -4 if you've plugged in, you know, the Ruse or something like that. I don't believe Boltons have a generic attachment with they don't have a generic attachment that brings intimidating presence. But regardless, Lannister's Guardsmen taking a panic test at -3 puts them on a morale 10. It's probably a fail. So they can also be punished. But more importantly, you have the option to run some of these elite units that are just sitting on the shelf. Greyjoys have Silenced Men. Silenced Men are phenomenal. Silenced Men can beat Lannister Guard in that grind. They've got Sundering. They've got a commander like Victarion. They've got attachments like Newt that bring vulnerable on the charge. Victarion has free charge cards. You charge into the Lannister Guardsmen with 2 pillage tokens. You're giving them 7 attacks with Sundering. They're vulnerable. And then they're taking a morale test with bad morale, and they're getting -2 to really dent that the effectiveness of that Lannister supremacy. That's just one example. Free folk have things like giants. Giants, I don't think they're going to care that much about Lannister supremacy because they take a max of 2 wounds for failing, and all that's going to do is make the giant angry. So the giant's just going to get a little bit stronger, and the guard with their standard attack profile is going to be really, really hard to get through a giant. You have other things. You have Cave Dweller Savages on the Free Folk side. They're a unit that does see some play, but they're a good unit. They're very low morale. They have Sundering. They have the capability of borrowing other abilities. The army does have Gang Up, so you can get your Cave Dweller Savages with a load of dice, and you can give them Insight to give them Vicious as well. So Cave Dweller Savages can punch through Lannister Guardsmen. Currently, Bolton Flayed Men on a charge can punch through Lannister Guardsmen. And I played against Hurley when I was teaching Madison the game, my 13-year-old daughter, and I just had a regular naked unit of Guardsmen. And, like, John didn't care. Like, he just charged straight into them with his Flayed Men, and with the panic test, the number of hits that he caused on the charge, he took 2 ranks off. So now you're looking at Lannister supremacy at -1. It did really nothing to the Flayed Men, and then the next round they killed them. So it's not like they're this unkillable unit that's just bouncing panic everywhere. And if you choose to spam Lannister Guardsmen, I think you kind of put yourself at a disadvantage because then you don't really have a unit that can punch through them. And if they beat you to an objective token, they can always still just retreat 1 inch away so that they're not engaged with you. But they're just not going to get through you. Like, Lannister Guardsmen versus Tully Sworn Shields, they're not going to win that battle. So you have options. And again, spamming Guardsmen is very, very slow army. You know, if you're running 3 Guardsmen, you have, like, the slowest army of all time next to Baratheons. and you're just going to struggle to get your points out of those guardsmen. And I don't necessarily know that it's going to be that bad. You'll be able to get to their flanks with cavalry. Yeah, and once you start to destroy ranks on those guardsmen, the effectiveness of Lannister supremacy is very, 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 very diminished. So I do get some reservation, but I think ultimately, just like anything else, we're just going to have to play a bunch of games. Because if you rewind to the release, everybody could see that Night's Watch was going to be really strong. But, you know, when you ask people, Lannisters were the second strongest. And Greyjoys just weren't very good. They weren't a strong faction. They were a new faction. They didn't have a whole lot of play. Free Folk were terrible, if you ask most people. Free Folk were just bad. And that's that mentality of people that were hanging on to 1.6, like, oh, no, I can't run insignificant spam and just win this game by attrition. This army is terrible. But come to find out several months later, Free Folk are one of the best armies. It's one of the armies that you don't want to see across from you because they're so good and so flexible. But it took a while for people to warm up to it. By the same token, Greyjoys took a while to hit their stride. It took a minute for people to, you know, kind of figure out their play style, figure out how to take advantage of these healing cards. You know, it took people a little bit of time to warm up to the fact that Windermere is one of the best NCUs in the game. And it just took some time, and it took some trial and error. And, you know, you saw a bunch of Iron Makers at first. Iron Makers with Eric Iron Maker NCU. This is my hammer / anvil. And, you know, some people like it, some people didn't. Then you saw, like, just Reaver spam. And now you're seeing, you know, double Bowman as a base for every list. So it's flexing and it's changing all of the time. And that's what it's going to be here. It's just going to take some adjustment. And if you are closed-minded, and I'm not trying to scold anyone or tell anyone that they're playing the game wrong, but if you're so closed-minded that you're unwilling to change the style that you play, you're unwilling to try new units in a new landscape, then that's your loss. But I think that it opens the door for exploration again. Even before we know anything that's been rebalanced or reworked, just that change to commanders, like I said, it's a shift to make defensive units viable because they're going to be able to get the most out of their defensive abilities that are built into their points cost, right? And they're going to give you a chance to play the attrition game if that's the style that you want to play. So a little bit of a mixed bag, kind of like an all-comers list. You've got a hammer, you've got an anvil, you've got some chaff, you know, things like that. Maybe finally they will be the way to play as opposed to, oh, well, just spam this unit because it's good. Just every Lannister list starts with three poor fellows because, hey, why not? They're hard to get through. They'll last until round four or five. They'll body block. They'll do everything that I need them to do. My commander goes in them. My commander's sole purpose is to sit on an objective. I don't even need to look at pyromancers because killing in this game doesn't matter that much because by the time the pyromancers get through the units, this game will be over. And I think people just need to open their mind and try some different stuff. I'm in the same boat. I haven't played with these changes, so I don't know what's going to work and what's not. I have lists to try. And I know from my experiences running like a very aggressive Gregor list at seven activations into the current landscape, there were games that I was very, very close. I destroyed most of their army, but they just held on long enough to close out the game before I could get to the backfield, to the second layer. Everybody's in the same boat. It's kind of like a soft reset, and let's see what works. Throw stuff at the wall until it sticks. That's kind of been the name of the game. Every update.
Yeah, I definitely could see where you're coming from with a lot of that. As far as, like, having faith in the developers, I definitely have faith that in the end they'll fix things that come up. But no one's perfect. I kind of, you know, let's say, for example, if my worst fear is right about the Lannister Supremacy and the list that I've tried, you know, granted only once, but, you know, I have faith that they will fix anything that comes up. I'm just more so worried about this being a repercussion of what seems like a healthy change. Like, I'll put it this way. If it wasn't for Lannister supremacy, at face value, I think this would be a healthy change to force people to have to attack or retreat. Like, thematically, you could say that it's thematic. Then again, you know, you could argue that adding in another action to, like, you know, stand your ground, you take a morale test, so not like a panic test, but a morale test, and if you fail, you have to retreat. Otherwise, if you pass, you're able to sit there and, you know, not do anything, you know, as if, like, the sergeant or whoever's, you know, commanding the unit's like, hey, guys, Attackium is obviously not working here. Let's bide our time. Let's hold this objective, and let's, you know, wait for some reinforcements, yada, yada. You could argue that sort of thing. You know, everyone could kind of argue their own, like, thematically, you know, thematic rule there. But overall, I think at face value, it could be a very healthy change. I'm not even that super worried about Visage. You know, let's say on the Followers of Bone and the Blackguard, they increase the damage. I mean, you could put an intimidating presence in there and get it increased that way, but the Lannister supremacy doing, you know, because if you bounce off that unit, let's say with just a bad roll, like one bad roll, you can get the damage upwards of 10 wounds. And, you know, and I think, you know, you can basically explode from attacking. And there's just too many ways to make it good. I think maybe if Lannister supremacy was, you know, didn't increase the damage, then it would be a different story. But, yeah, like I said, the Lannister supremacy is the only thing I'm truly worried about. And like you said, who knows what the change may be or what the changes may be for the update. Maybe Lannister supremacy is getting changed and maybe all of my worries are for nothing. It's one of those things that when they give us these tidbits, I wouldn't have it any other way. I wouldn't tell them to not give us these tidbits, but kind of one of the, you know, things that happen when you give, like when we're given the tidbits is speculation. It's just a normal, it's a natural thing to have speculation, and we can only go based off of the information that they give us. And because they haven't given us any other information, I mean, yes, we just kind of have to wait and see. And everything you have to take with a grain of salt. Like, you can't just assume the worst is automatic. For example, you know, I'm still playing the game. I'm trying it out. I'm, you know, let's say my worst fears are true and the game stays with the Lannister supremacy potentially exploding things all the time, with the exception of, like, having certain units that can ignore it or do good against it. I'll still play the game because, again, I have faith that if it becomes a true problem, that CMON will, you know, look at it, they'll take the data, and they'll address it. But, you know, that's, I guess, where come in as the community. You know, test as much as you can and get your feedback out there, whether it be from your local tournaments, bigger tournaments, just casual games. You know, CMON takes all that in. They take in their own playtesting stuff as well as, you know, just anything and everything they can. You know, if enough people are saying, hey, there's this problem, that's when they go, okay, maybe we should start looking at that. And then they start implementing, they start implementing those what seem like problems to the community into their playtesting, into their playtester group. So, you know, overall, I think, even if some of this, if the Lannister supremacy thing becomes a problem, that they'll address it. But overall, like the entire song chat and everything that they mentioned, I think are great changes. And I think this last one that me and Brett disagree just a little bit on, for the most part, I think it's a healthy change, the exception of Lannister Supremacy. I guess that's the simplest way for me to put it, like my opinion on it. I think it will give defensive units more of a purpose than just, I'm purchasing this unit so that they can sit on an objective. It gives you, because I've always been, with the exception of Ice and Fire, I've always been a very defensive player. I loved running units that didn't have a lot of offense, but they had a ton of defense. And this game can't necessarily do that. A super all defensive list rarely works. It can work, and there's certain outliers out there that can make it work, but as a rule, as like the general rule, all straight up defensive lists have a very hard time in this game. Now, hybrid lists, hybrid meaning you can have like half defense and half offense, those do quite well, because they complement each other. But then you go to the other end of that spectrum, and super offensive lists also do really well in this game. So I definitely agree with you, Brett, that this change definitely will help defensive units kind of get boost, which I think they need. I just personally think that Lannister Guardsmen are the one case where their ability is way more than what their point cost suggests. I would say Lannister Supremacy, if you're forced to attack Lannister Supremacy or retreat, they're an easy 6-point unit with nothing else. Because even though they have that 7-up morale, that 3-up defense is basically the best in the game. One unit plus the noble that have a 2-up save in the game.
Gregor, Stagnite, Noble, and Iron Makers. Gregor, Stagnite.
Yeah, Iron Makers can get there, with their ability.
Iron Makers with two pillage tokens and technically Karstark Spearmen.
Yep. So a 3-up save on a 5-up unit is awesome. Or a 5-point unit. And they mentioned how the Lannister Guardsmen have one of the worst profiles in the game, but when everything got dice reduced, the average dice profile for a 5-point unit is almost identical to Lannister Guardsmen, with the exception of they have 7 dice at, they have one more die at full ranks, and usually the same dice at second and the same dice at last. So literally one more die than a Lannister Guardsman. Now, Lannister Guardsmen have no keywords, but there are other units that don't have keywords. So it's one of those things that, Lannister Guardsmen, I think, are the one, they're the exception. They're not the rule when it comes to this new change. And I have high hopes for this new change. My one concern is really just the Guardsmen. Brett, is there anything else you wanted to add there?
Yeah, here's my last devil's advocate thing on this one, and it's probably going to sound a little abrasive, but it doesn't necessarily mean to, but kind of does. If you're taking a morale 7 or a morale 8 unit, and you're doing an opening attack on a full unit of guardsmen, I'm sorry, but you deserve to take, 6, 7, 8 wounds. And I don't mean to be rude and abrasive with that, but if that's your solution, if that's the best play that you can do, is to take a unit of free folk raiders and charge them headfirst into a unit of guardsmen, you probably, if you're shooting with Greyjoy Bowman into Lannister guardsmen in the front, probably, you're going to get what's going to happen. but when you get to their flanks,
you crown zap them. You spend a little bit of resources to gain sundering or something like this. But you're talking about units that are like 4 and 5 points. So, yeah, they're going to struggle with Lannister guardsmen who are specifically designed to do punishing panic damage. That's basically all they do. They're very slow. They hit on a 4+. You've got the Sparrow card that can let them hit on 3s with Sundering. You've got Mandon Moore who can let them hit on 3s with Sundering. If you want to put Gregor in them, you'd be paying 7 points for it for Tywin's Mad Dog, or that's where your commander's going to do 2 auto wounds. There's just not, like, I know the Assault Vet adds more panic damage, so you're getting Intimidating Presence off of that attack, and you can probably do some chip damage, but for me, it's just like they don't have the at-any-cost order that they have in 1.6, which actually really made them tough to get through, because you crown zap them to try to get a wound in, and maybe they spend at any cost, and so they've only taken 1 wound, and then they're still, you know, really healthy, and it was always a -2 with D3 plus 1. Now it's negative ranks remaining with D3 plus ranks remaining, but unless you're running Cersei, you've got 2 Hear Me Roars. And by way of Lannisters, which, I mean, I play Lannisters, that's in your basic deck, that's your dunk. That's your only basic deck offensive card. And a lot of commanders for Lannisters don't even really bring offensive cards to the party. As I mentioned, you have the High Sparrow. Jaime Lannister has a card that lets his unit reroll and they get vulnerable, I think. So that's 2. Gregor obviously has Assault Orders and Price of Failure, but Price of Failure could be really punishing for the guardsmen as well, because the one thing that they're good at is being defensive and resilient. If you play Price of Failure, roll 6 dice and miss 4 times, you just give your own unit. Overrun, obviously, is offensive. They'd have to actually kill something. You see what I'm getting at. There's other things that are kind of like bonkers power level too. I've played several games where Greyjoy Archers with Finger Dance shot into a flank. 6 dice, rerolls, you're vulnerable. All 6 hits go through, fail a panic test, take 2 or 3 wounds. That's 8 or 9 wounds from a 4-point unit with minimal resources, because Finger Dance is meant for bowmen. it's the best possible place to play them, because if they're engaging your bowmen and they're able to make you vulnerable to, get the bad side of that card, you're probably in trouble anyway if your Greyjoy bowmen are being charged. It's probably a bad sign for how the game's going for you. But I don't know. I guess we're definitely going to disagree about guardsmen. I think they're good. They're just not played right now very much, because they're slow and people just aren't going to attack them. And so they're not getting much value. And I think that they'll still be good, but there's going to be some cases where, hey, you're going to retreat, and that's the breaks, it's a rule change. It's a different landscape. They'll charge you, probably still not going to do a whole lot. And you've taken away their best ability. You still have the control to take away their best ability, because you can't force someone to attack you. And even with this change, you can't force them to attack you. They just retreat. So I just don't know how viable a guardsman spam list could be. Maybe it will be, and maybe I'm wrong, but we'll just have to see. I'm not overly concerned about Lannister guardsmen, to be honest. Bolton Flayedmen, way, way scarier, and they charge you and hurt you and do bad things to you. And they're mobile. And so.
Yeah, but then they still die. Like, the Flayedmen still die. Because then you'll take, a -3 of a -3, if not 4, if not -5, panic check with a panic token on you.
Yeah,
and then
I think the flavor. You fail
that panic, and then I heal up to 3 from Sparrow, and then I play Fealty and heal it all back up, and now your 8-point unit is basically dead from a Lannister supremacy after I've healed a bunch of wounds.
Sure. I had it happen. I was playing Larks has been on the show before. Larks is digging Lannisters right now. He had a unit of just naked guardsmen. Didn't even have his commander in it. It was just a unit of guardsmen as a 5-point unit, and I controlled the swords, and I charged them with hedge knights. And my thought process was, you know, 7 dice, sundering, vulnerable. I should do 5 or 6 wounds. I'll take my supremacy, but I owned the bag, +1. I was next to a weirwood tree. It was a +1. I was next to the sparrow. It was a +1. It was like, you know, it should be fine. And yeah, I failed my Lannister supremacy check. I took a bunch of wounds. He healed with fealty to the crown, and yeah, it sucked. But I mean, sometimes that can happen. I just don't see it as being any more of a feels bad than, you know, an 8-point unit getting wrecked by, like raiders that have Styre on them and a raid leader, and then they borrow coordinated assault and they charge in and do 11 hits with sundering. And it's like, well, that was really neat. My 8-point flayedman just exploded because raiders had like 11 hits. So it's just things that can happen, I guess, in the game. But the biggest thing is you're aware of what the guardsmen can do, and it's not hard to zone control them because they're slow.
Yeah, but I guess like with the list I gave, it's mostly because the you know, you can run 6 combat units, so it's very hard to flank them when you have 6 combat units, and then I definitely agree that the raiders shouldn't be able to be buffed so much that unit can do that to you, but at least it's a proactive action. Whereas a reactive is much different. That's why, like, the old Baratheon deck was, you know, could be insane sometimes. I know the timings for the cards could really make it a challenge sometimes, but having the, what was it, Hours is the Fury, is that the one that after attacked, then you attack, and then you activate and attack? So when you can, the guardsmen have, like, no punch, but if you can pop off 8 guys with a Lannister supremacy, your unit's essentially useless now, and more often than not. And that panic doesn't care who you are, unless you're a giant, of course, because you have the no more than 2 wounds. But you could be a stag knight with your resilience order. You could be a flayed man. You could even be champions of the stag. It doesn't matter. The guardsmen only have to poke you with 1 wound to do some panic damage, and if you try to attack them back, you can explode the unit. And it's just, I think it's going to be able to get out of hand too quickly. But at this point, we're kind of just beating a dead horse. It's one of those things that we see how it kind of shapes out. There's a lot of unknowns at this point. And, you know, I've already said it before, but I will say it again to close it out, that Lannister supremacy, my only concern with this rule. Otherwise, I think it could be healthy for the game to force, players to not just activate and sit and do nothing. That, and it never, like, casually, it never made sense, kind of like you were saying with your game, you know, you could have just won by, you know, just doing some stuff, but you decided to just kind of play the game and have some fun. And I think that's where I think it'll really shine is, it never feels right to kind of play so hard to the mission in a casual game. You're there to roll some dice, you know, just kind of YOLO it and, you know, some YOLO charges and just, you know, whereas doing nothing would auto win you the game, but, you know, where's the fun in that? You know, just kind of, you know, get some dice rolled. So, you know, we'll have to see. But overall, I think Simon's doing a great job. I think, you know, no one cares about this game more than they do. So maybe this is something that they've already seen. I'm just a little worried because of how much they were defending the guardsmen in the song chat. but maybe they're defending them because something's changing with them, or maybe there's something coming to other units that will help counter Lannister supremacy, or, you know, maybe it's something else. With that said, I want to thank all of you guys for listening in. I apologize that we had like 2 weeks of nothing. Definitely want to get with our shows. The next show will, unless something big drops, the next show will be like a tactics talk. We did have a caller in that was wanted to talk about tactics stuff. We'll definitely, I'm writing down the question that they had that was more tactics talk related. That way we can discuss it in the next episode. If you're still listening, go ahead and send Small Council Radio's messenger a message, and we can kind of go over some of that as well. And also for those that were on our Discord, I had mentioned that we will be doing another giveaway soon, now that most of all the card packs and all the other giveaways that we had are now we got those out to those people. Still missing a couple other card packs, but I'm going to reach out to them again because I haven't heard from them in a hot minute. But stay tuned for the next giveaway because I have a ton of stuff to give away. I'm not giving all of it away all at once, but I do have a stockpile. I have a Greyjoy starter. I have a Free Folk starter. I have a Baratheon starter. I now have another, 2, 4, 6, 8, 10... 15 unit boxes, and they're all like good unit boxes. They're not just like some starter unit boxes. Not that those units aren't great, but a lot of people end up, they have a bunch of those already from having bought the starters. So definitely stay tuned for that. They will be. I do know one thing is they will be tied to calling in to the show. I'd like to get more callers in to kind of give their thoughts on, the topic that we have going on for that show. So definitely stay tuned for that. And I'll be trying to get shows, multiple shows with the giveaways at different times of day to kind of help out with those that, that work during the day or that work during the night, maybe work during the week or work during the weekend and so on. Try to diversify the schedule a bit. That way most everyone has at least a chance. And don't forget that it is just, it is just a simple call. If you, hit the link that we send out, there is a link to just kind of call in. So even if you're at work, if you have a few minutes to kind of, get away from work and you can just call, or maybe you're allowed to use your phone while at work, you don't have to be like at a computer listening to like the podcast in that way. You can call that number and it's almost just like a phone call. And we encourage people to call on every episode, and we try to make sure, to make it a point to try to get some people on and, give us their thoughts on the episode that we're, that we're doing and the topic at hand. So definitely keep that in mind as well. Never feel like, you're not welcome or whatnot. And you're always, we appreciate anyone who's, who's able to call in, whether or not you're experienced or you are experienced, even if it's just to ask a question or even if it's just to give us your opinion, maybe it's an opinion that's the same as ours or different than ours, no matter what, we'd love to have you guys call in and we'd love to start getting more callers because I think, we definitely have a lot of people listening to the show, but most people are just kind of listening to it after the fact, but we do our shows live. Every single time. They are all live. They are all unedited. They're unscripted. They're just, we kind of go at this, on a whim, I guess is one way to put it. So, keep that in mind for, future episodes. I want to thank you, Brett, for coming on. I know we sort of had a different opinion on that last topic, but I think overall, for the most part, I think we're on the same page for most of what the song chat was about.
Oh, yeah, sure. It's no problem. It was a pretty healthy debate / discussion. So good times.
Yep. So just want to give some shout-outs. You know, as always, check into A Song of Ice and Fire stats.com. That's where you can create a profile and upload your matches with another person who has a profile. And that way you can kind of record your games. You can kind of see how you're doing. You can kind of you can input that data so that way we can, you know, as a collective, see what commanders, what factions, all the different data, and see what's doing well, what's not. Also, check out Sunday Slaughter, amazing podcast and YouTube channel that does battle reports. Not to, throw any other, or to downplay any other battle reports out there. My personal favorite battle reports are Sunday Slaughter. There's other amazing content creators out there doing better reports. So definitely check them all out. Check out Sunday Slaughter and, keep an eye out for all the other content creators out there. There's so many of them. And every little bit helps, especially if you're itching for some more, content. I believe it's On the Table Gaming on their site. If you go on the Table Gaming .com, if I'm correct, they actually have a tab that will give you a list of every single content creator that they know of. It's a pretty long list, so definitely check that out. And then I want to give a shout out for the LVO coming up in January. I believe it's a third week in January. It's in Las Vegas, so there might still be tickets. I am not sure, but definitely check that out if you're looking for a bigger event. And then Adepticon should be coming up, I believe, in March. And I think they are going to be starting tickets sales in January. So keep that in mind. I also believe that Gamers Haven is having another tournament in January. I want to say it's the week before, or maybe 2 weeks before LVO. I would check in with AsongOfIceAndFireStats.com has a list of all tournaments, and it is on there. So if you wanted to get the dates for that, those events are awesome. They're usually very large, so I would definitely check that out. Again, guys and gals, thank you so much for listening in. I really do appreciate everyone that tunes in. You know, the one way you can definitely show your support for the channel, just share out the show. Just share it out to your gaming group, to any groups that you're a part of that consist of A Song of Ice and Fire miniatures. And that's the number one way you can show your support for us. With that said, this is the Small Council Radio, and it is dismissed.